you can see in some of the readings that, again, there's this emphasis on the three types of insight that we're focusing on this weekend. That if you look at the quotation near the top of the first page, I'll read it so you don't need to look at it. It says, practitioners develop concentration. A practitioner who is concentrated, it means the mind is settled, understands things as they really are. And what does one understand as it really is? One understands as it really is, the I is impermanent. And then forms are impermanent. Basically going down the list, this is impermanent, that is impermanent. So first impermanence, then one understands as it really is, this is dukkha, or suffering. One understands as it really is, this is the origin of dukkha, and so forth. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So there's this connection with understanding dukkha and impermanence and anatta as the fundamental nature of the way things are and the way experience is. The emphasis of the teachings is particularly around dukkha. You know, the teaching of the Four Noble Truths and the other teachings really focus especially on dukkha. So in a way, not knowing impermanence leads to dukkha. Being confused about self leads to dukkha. But the aim, it says, there's one of the other quotations under the listing of dukkha or reactivity is, I have taught one thing and one thing only, dukkha and the end of dukkha. Mm. That's it, right? And so, in a way, the second of these could be said to be more fundamental, or it's mentioned more, but it's always connected with the other two. And so, when we don't understand impermanence, we grasp more. And there's more dukkha, there's more reactivity. When we don't understand the nature of our being, ourselves, there's more dukkha. And so they're all very much connected. And we can actually use any of them. We may, each of us, have a sort of resonance, do you know that word? Resonance or connection with one of these more than the other. Some of us might say, oh, I really just want to look for reactivity in my experience and try to look for that continually and try to, when I notice reactivity, just see if I can not shoot the second arrow, if I can be responsive rather than reactive, like in some of the examples today. You know, and some of us, that can be the main thing to look at. That's probably true for me. You know, that was really fundamental. Some of us may really be drawn to look at impermanence. You know, some of us may be drawn to say, you know, even outside of these three, I'm really drawn to love and compassion. And I want to develop love and compassion and see that which gets in the way, which is usually dukkha. Right? And so some of us, we may be called, especially by love or by metta, compassion, the heart. Right? So each of us are different, but we have to listen for what really is most important for us. I mentioned that the teachings on anatta, usually translated in English as not self, I think no self is not a correct translation. It's not a good translation. Anyone who knows English pretty well knows that we often have the letter A right before another word, and it means not. You know, like we would say amoral. Do you know that word? Like amoral. It means not moral. You know, or we, what is another one? We would say
apathy.
Yeah, apathy is a word also, apathos. Pathos is related to suffering. and to kind of like feeling, right? So apathy means not feeling, right? And so...
Asymmetry,
right? Mm-hmm. Means not symmetry, right? And the Pali and Sanskrit are related in that way. They are called Indo-European languages. And so this is similar in the languages. So mm-hmm. when people translate and say no self, it gets very confusing. So I want to talk a little bit about anatta, and then we'll do practices. So this is, again, more my orienting talk on anatta. And I mentioned, of the three, definitely the most confusing. Tremendous confusion. And as a teacher, I know that when I get a question about anatta, especially when we're not focusing on it, I will say, look out. Because often the question comes from someone who is struggling more intellectually with the concept of anatta, and it just get the mind gets turned into a pretzel.
What?
Bagel.
Pretzel. A bagel.
Bagel.
And so what I think I want to do is to talk some about the confusion. And my approach here that I have found useful over the years is to make this very practical. And basically to say there are two main ways. And this structure of teaching anatta comes from me. It's not in the text. You know, and it actually makes use of some Western psychology, Western resources as well. But I find it very simple and very helpful as a way to explore this, because otherwise it's quite confusing. But it also is grounded in the traditional teachings. And so the practical approach that I take is, first of all, to see that what is being pointed to is the possibility of experiencing without there being much sense of self. And I mentioned yesterday that this is actually a common experience, that we often, when we're just with the sunset, or just with, sometimes maybe just eating, and we're just with the sensations, or just seeing the colors, there's not much sense of self. You know, if we say, I will take a picture, and I hope it's a good picture, there may be starting to be a sense of self, right? Uh-huh. Or, we're looking at the sunset and someone says something to me and I am reactive. Don't talk to me, I'm focusing on the sunset. There could be a sense of self there, but often we're just with the sunset and no sense of self. And we can, I'll talk about that some. And then the other side of it, and so I'll go back. So we try to find ways to have experience of the flow of life without much sense of self. And that's one kind of practice. And we'll do that. And that can be done in ordinary experience, also in meditation. And then the second approach is to see where the self becomes thick. And so I use the metaphors of thick and thin. What would that be in Hebrew? Thick?
Thick.
Huh? You have to spell it?
I think you're talking about more the chus.
Solid. Thick, like solid.
Thick.
Yeah, like solid.
Contracted. Yeah. Condensed thick?
Yeah, thick. Yeah, thick would mean very solid, very, like... It also means wide. So thick and thin. Thin means, it could be a person, very thin, or very thick. Right. So what's that in Hebrew?
It depends on the context.
Depends on the context. Okay.
Only when you explain, we can say the words.
Okay.
A lot of people I heard use the word solidify.
Yeah, solidify also, but in at least in English, thick and thin can be very helpful, because it's like what we look for is when the sense of self gets big. So it doesn't matter so much. Thick and thin is a nice, in English, nice metaphor, but it's like when the sense of self gets big, gets solid, that's what we're looking for. But then also, is there sometime when the sense of self, very thin, small. So it's really big and small, thick and thin, solid, and not so solid. That's what we're talking about. And so the first kind of practice is trying to experience with not much sense of self or no sense of self. So self is small, self is thin, okay? And then the second kind of practice is looking for when the self is big, sense of self is big or thick, you know? And when I'm reactive, almost always sense of self is big, right? Does that make some sense? So that's what I'll be looking at. So first I'll talk about confusion, the confusions about this teaching, which is there are many, and then secondly about the sense of not much sense of self, and then thirdly about when the sense of self gets thick. And then again, two kinds of practices, trying to have not much sense of self, and then looking for the sense of thick self, or big self, or solid self. Okay? So
one of the things I've wondered about is when you have a low self-esteem and your self feels kind of small, it actually is a very thick self.
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always confused me about this.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, it's one can, there can be a thick self thinking very negatively about oneself. That's very thick, right? Or one Tibetan teacher said, to be timid is such an ego trip. Do you understand? So we'll get to that though, but I think you're right. So the thickness doesn't mean that you think positively. You can have negative thoughts about self and it gets very thick, very big, okay? And by the way, this is a very large topic. We could talk about this for the rest of the day, and I sometimes do a whole day just on this. You know, and it's very interesting, and it, you know, especially you can get into psychology and very, very fascinating. You know, and you know, I'm doing a book called On Transforming the Judgmental Mind, which is just one small aspect of how you deal with a one kind of thick self. Right? And it's very interesting, and you can go in 100 directions. Very interesting. So there's a lot of confusion. I mentioned some of the yesterday the Jewish Buddhist joke about if the Buddha says there is no self, and the Torah says love your neighbor as yourself, then I guess I don't have to follow the commandment, right? So, and then just in many traditions, it can be very confusing because if the Buddha teaches not self, but then in other traditions you hear talking about the true self, right? Or in some psychology like Carl Jung, you have the self with capital S, you know? And so, you know, and this is the good thing, right? And same thing in other religious traditions, like in Hinduism, you want to have the big self. You want to, that's when you find the truth, you find the big self. So it could be very, very confusing. And even in Buddhism, there are words which sound like big self. There's the word, one of the words for a highly developed person, they are called Maha-Atta. Atta means self. And so this is the same word that was used for Gandhi, Mahatma, Mahatma Gandhi, which means basically great self. So this is sometimes used as the word for someone who is spiritually developed. So how do you know, so it's not self, great self, this is within the same tradition. And there's another term used which is Bhavit Atta, which means developed self. Or someone who has the first stage of enlightenment is called a big person. So you read all these, okay. Not self, big self, what's going on? And then, and I think it's probably also this way in Hebrew, there are a lot of other words which gets very confusing. You know, that there are confusions in English about the very word self. You know, what does it mean? In a lot of psychology, it's very ordinary. Or even you have a word like ego, you know? In a lot of psychology, this is very ordinary. It's not a problem. But then we also have other times when ego means something bad and selfish, right? Is that way in in Dharma here? People use the word ego sometimes?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's very confusing because in psychology, ego is so often just neutral. It just means the capacity to have unified experience. Right? It's not a big deal. And it's also, by the way, a very bad translation from Freud. You know, we shouldn't even have the word ego at all because it sounds self-centered, right?
Yeah.
Egotistical. But, you know, anyone who knows German knows that the word is more the word for I. It's not self. It's not ego. Right? So, anyway, 100 different confusions. Right? And And it also can be confusing because the Buddha taught different things. He seemed to, sometimes he used to teach that this teaching of not self, or that there's no self, or there's a self. But at other times, there was a very famous dialogue with a wandering yogi named Vajragata. Some of you may know this if you know the text. And Vajragata came and he asked the Buddha, is there a self? And the Buddha stayed silent. And then he said, is there no self? And he stayed silent. And then the wandering yogi Vajragata was frustrated and he left. And then afterwards, the Buddha was talking with his attendant, Ananda, and this is what he said. And he said, why did you not answer? You know, he might have said, why did you not teach not self? Maybe he could do this. And the Buddha says, if Ananda, when I was asked by Vajragata, is there a self, I had answered, there is a self, he would have fallen to one extreme. And if I was, when I was asked, is there no self, and I had said there is no self, I would have gone to the other extreme. And if I had said there was a self, would this have been consistent with not self? And Ananda said no. And then, so are you getting confused?
Yes.
And so you get the idea. So basically the Buddha didn't even want to turn it into language. He wanted to keep silent about it because there was so much confusion about this. And so that will be mostly our strategy.
That the guy who got frustrated was showing that he has a big self.
Probably,
allowing himself to not understand.
Sometimes you're just not interested in the conversation. Maybe the Buddha wasn't interested in it. Then the other one left.
Well, I think what it is that if you look at the teachings of the Buddha, they're not all consistent. And I think, sometimes he's trying to teach practically, but there's sometimes a more, maybe we would say, philosophically sophisticated view. And I think it is that case with the self. It's more, it's sort of, we would say, middle way. And that's what he was teaching here, is the middle way between self and not self. Now, can you see why when you try to look at it conceptually, it can get confusing? So my approach is not to talk about that. It's really to say, here are these two approaches that are more practical. And you try to think it out or bring in psychology, or there are a lot of interesting issues, but it can get very confusing. I'm going to try to keep it simple. And so what I want to look at is the ways that we, first of all, can have a sense of not much sense of self, a thinned out sense of self, a thin self is the language I use. And we can find this both in ordinary experience and in meditation. So I hope from now on it can be clear, because I could find myself saying, oh, all these words can be very confusing, right? And especially you're listening to me speak in English. Okay? So there's a very simple way to talk about anatta in the sense of the thin self, and that is by using the concept of flow. And I think this is something that we experience in ordinary life a lot. Do you know the concept of flow? There's a Hungarian psychologist named Csikszentmihalyi. Very hard to pronounce, right? Csikszentmihalyi.
Yeah,
Csikszentmihalyi.
It's got like 15 letters. Mm-hmm. Csikszentmihalyi. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Csikszentmihalyi. And he developed the sense that often we are very much in the present moment. We are very, very full. We have almost no sense of self. And we are performing at a very high level. And we can do this when we work sometimes. We can do this just with friends. And for me, it's not exactly the same as anatta, or not self, but it's very close, I think. And there's a way in which we are just having experience happen, and we are very full. It could be, for example, when someone is an artist or a musician, and there's no sense of self, it's just happening, right? This is what Csikszentmihalyi, is that pronouncing it right?
I think so.
That's what I've...
It's Georgian.
Csikszentmihalyi. Anyway, we will not talk about him too much, so it's okay. He says, with flow, a person performing an activity is fully immersed in a feeling of energy and focus, full involvement, and enjoyment in the process of the activity. In essence, flow is characterized by complete absorption in what one does. And I would say that this is an ordinary form of anatta. And we can also experience a meditative form of it. And so when I asked a group that I teach, what were some examples? People gave examples of one person, I'm an artist. And when I'm doing my art, I, at my best, there's no sense of self. I'm just letting the creative process come through me. Right? And same thing with music. And one of the examples of this that probably is easiest to see is something like jazz, where a jazz musician is just with, we would say, just with the flow of the music. So even using the same word, just with the flow. And if a jazz musician is with the flow and then says, oh, that was very good what I just did, that person, no more flow, right? Is out of the flow. That's the thick sense of self coming in. And is not in that flow experience. And it could be also what? Again, we could be with the sunset, could be in the mountains, could be in the desert, right? Just a very fully there, could be with other people in this way, people that we are very close to maybe. There might be very little or no sense of self, just no self-consciousness, no self-image, right? These are what comes with the thick self, right? Thick self, self-image, self-consciousness, oh, people are looking at me, or how am I appearing to others, right? Or, oh, I hope they noticed how good that was, right? Mm-hmm. That is all thick self, right?
Isn't it contradictory to the contradictory to the Buddha teaching that awareness and mindfulness, because if I'm in the flow and I can appreciate this feeling, trying to solve a problem and you're totally in the process and you're just like addicted to it, okay? But then I have no aware of what I'm feeling, I have no aware of how my body posture, so it's like...
That's a good point, yeah. In that sense of flow, there may not be mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good point. So I'm not saying this is the same, I'm saying it's an ordinary way to experience anatta. And we may also sometimes have mindfulness. So, one example I like a lot also in sports, you can see this all the time, and they have words in sports. Some of you know, do you know the phrase in the zone? Yeah, in sports, especially, but many sports, but especially basketball. And they would be playing, and they have no thoughts, and they're often at their best, right? I remember there was one basketball. I'm sorry, you have to indulge my interest in basketball. But there was one championship with. Do people know Michael Jordan?
Of course.
Okay, you know Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan, this was maybe 20 years ago. He was in a championship, and he He, I think he scored like six straight three-pointers. And he was in the zone. And then he goes by the scorer's table and he goes like this.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, it's not me. Or, you know.
With his shoulders. Like.
His shoulders, he went back. Also, it means he became self-conscious.
Yeah.
He missed his next shot. Right? And so, that would be an example. And so I think this sense of flow, but I think your question is very good. So the sense of flow is something like anatta, but we're not necessarily mindful of it, you know. But there is, can be very, very powerful. There are qualities of that experience. And this is something that can be there in a very ordinary way. We may also be mindful, just maybe washing the dishes. And just to be very, it's basically fullness with the activity. And as mindfulness practitioners, we can bring in mindfulness. That's one way to practice with that. And so there's another way that this flow also can be more from the point of view of meditation practice and mindfulness practice. And this is actually was very directly taught by the Buddha. He taught a way of let's see where this is here. He taught a way of practicing, which is very similar to what we do, where we are simply aware of the flow of different phenomena, and in a way we can make a mental note, but there's not much sense of self or no sense of self. So sometimes in the meditation, I just sit here and there's a thought, maybe, there's body sensation, I hear a sound, and I can experience that as a flow of experience. When the mind is quiet, there can be that sense of one thing after another without any reaction, without any sense of, I like this, I don't like this, this is really good, I'm really good to have this thought, and so forth. And there can be, when the mind gets quiet, one can have this sense of one thing after another with no sense of self or very little sense of self. And that's what we can explore in meditation. Okay? And again, I think we do that a lot anyway. We would just sit here and we would be with the breath. You would notice one thing after another. And you would notice whenever there was a sense of I like this, I don't like this, I don't want this, any reactivity. And you would see where that's basically what I'm calling the thick self, where the big self is coming in. And we try to train to develop this sense of flow in meditation, right? Okay? Does that make some sense? So these are two ways to practice. One in more ordinary experience, and the other one in meditation, where we can just let the flow of experience happen without much sense of self, reactivity, and so forth. And then, and so we train to have more and more of that sense of experience without a sense of self. And that's where it develops. And there's a whole way that can deepen. You know, we start by just trying to notice and not take it personally. Notice, oh, there is sensation, there's a sound, there's this. And this connects with the Buddhist teaching on what are called the five aggregates, the five elements of experience. Some of you know there is form, there is the sense of pleasant or unpleasant, there is perception, there are thoughts and emotions, there is consciousness. He gave that model as a way to, can you just look at experience without bringing in a sense of self? And so that's a second way, that's the way we practice. We can be with ordinary flow, we can be with the flow of experience and meditation without much sense of self. That's the first way to practice. And then the second way to practice is to really study when there is a thick sense of self, when there is a big sense of self. And again, you can see how they're connected, you know, if I'm doing meditation, I can just be with that flow, and then I notice when I get reactive. I notice when I say, I like this. I notice when I say, oh, I am a very good meditator, you know, and so forth. And that would be the thick self. So we study whenever the self gets big, when it gets thick, and so forth. And what's interesting is that the sense of a thick self can be there for many reasons. It can be there because there is reactivity. It can be there because there, and this is where I find a lot of use with Western psychology and also Western understanding of social conditioning, that in a way we have a thick sense of self wherever maybe we have a developmental wound. Do you know that? Or a developmental trauma. That will lead to a thick sense of self, you know? And so let's say that I was 7 years old, my parents were divorced, and I developed what we would say fear of abandonment, okay? And that will lead sometimes to a thick sense of self. And so I have a partner, my partner wants to go away for the weekend, all of a sudden, no, not good, you know? And that would be an example of a thick sense of self connected with a wound, something from one's own personal history. And that can be many, many ways, right? So this is where, for me, I think Western psychology is very helpful to identify how the self becomes thick. Many, many ways. And same thing with social conditioning. And I should back up. Some of this is, of course, very hidden or unconscious or half-conscious, right? That a lot of the ways that we have wounds or trauma, we may not even know ourselves that it is there, right? And we may look like we have a very thick self, and I might not even know why. So when we look to study the thick self, you can see it's a very deep area, right? And I think for me also very interesting is that we have a thick self because of social conditioning. Some of that is not so clear, right? That it's beneath the surface. I may have a very thick self because of my social conditioning as a man, gender conditioning. It's very thick, but it's often beneath the surface, right? So I might not be very aware. I just have assumptions, or I have a thick sense of self around being a man, but I don't even know that it's there. Mm-hmm. It's not very clear, right? We can have that around gender, around all sorts of things, right? The usual things we look at, gender, race, you know, level of education, religion, all sorts of things. I can think, oh, I am really good because I am in this group, right? And that can be often not very conscious or hidden. I think that's interesting for me, because I think if we really want to look at the thick self, you see, we use meditation, but I think we also need to use psychology, and we also need to look at our social conditioning. If we really want to get at the thick self, we're not going to do that all that today. Okay. But does that make sense? So you see, this makes practice quite large, doesn't it?
It's endless inquiry.
It's kind of endless inquiry, yeah. Maybe not endless, but it's a lot, right? Yeah, if we're interested in seeing what gets in the way of the flow of experience, we have to look at all these things, don't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a question?
Yeah. Okay. I have a very fundamental conflict with the whole issue of effort and trying,
right,
and aiming and goal, like the whole seeking energy, the right. whole seeking, the whole spiritual seeking,
right.
Say that like that, which is like trying to improve myself in some way. Let's say I would be very happy, like I would just flow and love my life, and if I wouldn't have any issues, I would probably wouldn't go to Buddhism, or I would just live.
Yeah.
And do whatever I do.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of seeking and trying, that comes from some very thick me.
It can, part of it, yeah. It can also come from wisdom.
I mean, who is the one there who wants to improve?
That's for you to inquire. If you think it's only the thick self, I think that can be wrong. And the best spiritual practice lets you look into that question. But if you think that the only reason for spiritual seeking is a thick sense of self, I think that is mistaken.
I understand that this is what I need to inquire.
That's what you... Yeah, most systems, like what I have studied, for example, first of all, it's a very legitimate question. And it's... you know, we can know that because we can see spiritual practitioners who have a very thick sense of self. And the whole sense of spiritual practice, we can have identity around it. I can wear certain clothes so everyone knows I am a spiritual practitioner. Right? I can talk about how many retreats I go to. It can become a big thing. Right? Can be a lot of, we can see often a lot of sense of self with the effort to transcend the self. Right? But most skillful systems have ways to work with that. You know, so you recognize that as a problem, but there's some ways that you keep on looking for it. In other words, even if you have that as part of your way of practicing, a skillful system will have ways to correct that. We'll have ways to correct that and to, for example, one of my teachers, once I had been practicing for maybe 20 years, and he had me one retreat, he said, don't do anything for 10 days, no spiritual practice. But he also said, try to be aware. And that was a corrective. So there, most skillful systems have ways of getting at that problem. And you have to see your motivation, because some of the motivation for having less dukkha can come from love and wisdom. It's not just the thick self. It can come from other motivation. So that's what you have to see in yourself. Yes, some part of the motivation is to make myself better, maybe. But there's other motivation there also. It's not only that, if you look carefully. For most people, there can be something very deep that says, that calls you. You know, that is not so narrow. Yeah. So you have to look and see if it's only something narrow that is saying, or you're just saying, oh, I want to improve my small self. Yeah.
It's more of a paradox that I find myself many times stuck inside while in meditation or daily life, that the mere act of trying prevents me from finding out. It's like a paradox that I'm not looking for a solution.
I think if you keep practicing and have good teachers, no problem. You have to keep practicing, though. Because, you know, in teachings of the Buddha, for example, there's a very clear teaching about what is wise effort and what is unwise effort. Very, very clear. You know? And there is unwise effort, you know, and there can be unwise trying, but there also can be very skillful. You know, the word is translated as effort. It's not such a good translation of virya, but it means basically energy. There is skillful use of energy, and there is unskillful. So, so your issue is addressed very directly, in very wise systems. So I think mostly stay with it, keep asking the question. But if you use your question as a reason not to practice, you'll never find out.
Okay. Can I ask I'm curious about the mechanics of the self. So, for instance, you mentioned yesterday about public speaking and you being shy. And
yeah.
So that's like there's some kind of a conversation going in the background, saying they're not gonna love me, I'm gonna fail, blah 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 blah, and then you get scared. That's a mechanic of self.
Yeah, that would be if I'm shy, that would be kind of a thick sense of self. Yeah. How we work skillfully with this.
Huh?
Yeah, there's thoughts, there's everything. So I'm not trying to give a lot of detail about this. Like I say, if we, you know, people do books on this. And I'm just trying to say for us, here are these two ways of practice. Try to have a sense of flow of experience, number one, and then look for the thick self, number two. To actually, you know, if I wanted to look for my thick sense of self as shy, and if that was there in a strong way, well, you know, that might be something I look at for a few years and maybe get some help from psychologists and so forth. And it's not so simple, right? But we can start by seeing these two ways of practicing. How to work it out if you find, oh, I have a thick sense of self because, you know, my parents divorced and I have a sense of, I have fear of abandonment, you know, and a thick sense of self develops when my partner goes away for the weekend. Well, you probably will need some many, many ways of working with that, not just a little bit of mindfulness. Right? So, does that make some sense? So I'm not trying to give all the answers in half an hour.
You have the whole day.
Yeah?
You have the whole day.
Yeah, we have another hour or two to finish everything. Yeah. So the details of this are endless, right? But I'm just trying to give a very simple way. My interest here is to make this practical. And just you say, okay, I have two basic practices for anatta. Try to have a sense of flow, and then try to look for the thick self.
Do you ever use words like expansive, like the thin self is also more just expanded?
You could use that.
Or like the thick self is more contracted?
Yeah, that I think there are different metaphors, mm-hmm. and that would be very could be very helpful. So mm-hmm. I've been using thick and thin. Some people would use solid and more transparent, not so solid, more contracted and expansive. These are all metaphors that I think can be helpful. So if you find that more useful for you, that's fine. Because the sense of self, the thick self can be also very contracted, right? Like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I think we should do some walking meditation now. And I think I will take the suggestion to, if anyone wants to talk with me, I will go in near the kitchen and let this be just walking meditation here. I think that's better. And so I could talk with people about anything that's come up. But I think it's good to also, we had a lot of talking, that's the main talking on anatta. So it's good to practice. And I'm going to suggest for your practice, you do two things. And for the walking meditation, we'll do about a half hour. And try to just be with your walking with that sense of the flow of walking, just the sensations of walking. See if you can just, and then notice when there's a thick sense of self. Okay, that's what our focus is. Do your walking. Okay, I'm just with the flow, the sensations in my feet, in my body maybe, and then I have a thought, oh, what will I have for lunch? Mm. You know, and it's a little bit the thick self, right? Or you think, oh, that person is walking too close to me.
Uh-huh.
Right? And you just notice that. It's a small example of a thick sense of self. So what we look for the thick sense of self in our own minds are liking and not liking, reactivity, self-image, self-consciousness, right? Self-centered thinking. Those are basic signs of thick self, right? So you can, all we want to do is just notice when those come. So try to be with the flow, number one, and then look for the thick self just as self-centered thinking, reactivity, self-image, liking and not liking, connected with self, and so forth. So, is that clear? Okay, so we do about half an hour, and we'll ring a bell on this clock. We'll ring a bell.